Chapter 42. Velocity without falling headlong into a pit, or snapping off his leg, by jamming his foot into some rabbit burrow. But then went on without much inconvenience to himself, and the course of his scamper was towards the quiet woman inn. This place he reached in about half an hour, and he was well aware that no person who had been near Throop Corner when he started could have got down here before him. The lonely inn was not yet closed, though scarcely an individual was there, the business done being chiefly with travelers who passed the inn on long journeys, and these had now gone on their way. Then went to the public room, called for a mug of ale, and inquired of the maid in an indifferent tone if Mr. Wilde was at home. Thomason sat in an inner room, and heard Ven's voice. When customers were present she seldom showed herself, owing to her inherent dislike for the business, but perceiving that no one else was there tonight she came out. "He is not at home yet, Diggory," she said pleasantly. "But I expected him sooner. He has been to East Egdon to buy a horse. Did he wear a light widowick?"
"Yes."
"Then I saw him at Throop Corner, leading one home," said Ven dryly. "Beauty, with a white face and a mane as black as night. He will soon be here, no doubt." Rising and looking for a moment at the pure, sweet face of Thomason, over which a shadow of sadness had passed since the time when he had last seen her, he ventured to add, "Mr. Wilde seems to be often away at this time."
"Oh yes," cried Thomason in what was intended to be a tone of gaiety. "Husbands will play the truant, you know. I wish you could tell me of some secret plan that would help me to keep him home at my will in the evenings."
"I will consider, if I know of one," replied Ven in that same light tone which meant no lightness. And then he bowed in a manner of his own invention and moved to go. Thomason offered him her hand, and without a sigh, though with food for many, the riddleman went out. When Wilde returned, a quarter of an hour later, Thomason said simply, and in the abashed manner usual with her now, "Where is the horse, Damon?"
"Oh, I have not bought it, after all. The man asks too much."
"But somebody saw you at Throop Corner leading it home, a beauty, with a white face and a mane as black as night."
"Ah," said Wilde, fixing his eyes upon her, "who told you that?"
"Then the riddleman." The expression of Wilde's face became curiously condensed. "That is a mistake, it must have been someone else," he said slowly and testily, for he perceived that Ven's counter moves had begun again. For rough coercion is employed, those words of Thomason, which seemed so little, but meant so much, remained in the ears of Diggory Ven Colon, "help me to keep him home in the evenings." On this occasion Ven had arrived on Egdon Heath, only to cross to the other side. He had no further connection with the interests of the Yeobright family, and he had a business of his own to attend to. Yet he suddenly began to feel himself drifting into the old track of maneuvering on Thomason's account. He sat in his van and considered. From Thomason's words and manner he had plainly gathered that Wilde neglected her. For whom could he neglect her, if not for Eustacia? Yet it was scarcely credible that things had come to such a head as to indicate that Eustacia systematically encouraged him. Ven resolved to reconnoiter somewhat carefully the lonely road which led along the vale from Wilde's dwelling to Klim's house at Alderworth. At this time, as has been seen, Wilde was quite innocent of any predetermined act of intrigue, and except at the dance on the green he had not once met Eustacia since her marriage. But that the spirit of intrigue was in him had been shown by a recent romantic habit of his, a habit of going out after dark and strolling towards Alderworth, there looking at the moon and stars, looking at Eustacia's house, and walking back at leisure. Accordingly, when watching on the night after the festival, the riddleman saw him ascend by the little path, lean over the front gate of Klim's garden, sigh, and turn to go back again. It was plain that Wilde's intrigue was rather ideal than real. Ven retreated before him down the hill to a place where the path was merely a deep groove between the heather. Here he mysteriously bent over the ground for a few minutes, and retired.
When Wildov came onto that spot, his ankle was caught by something, and he fell headlong. As soon as he had recovered the power of respiration, he sat up and listened. There was not a sound in the gloom beyond the spiritless stir of the summer wind. Feeling about for the obstacle which had flung him down, he discovered that two tufts of heath had been tied together across the path, forming a loop, which to a traveler was certain overthrow. Wildov pulled off the string that bound them, and went on with tolerable quickness. On reaching home, he found the cord to be of a reddish color. It was just what he had expected. Although his weaknesses were not specially those akin to physical fear, this species of coup de jarnac from one he knew too well troubled the mind of Wildov. But his movements were unaltered thereby. A night or two later, he again went along the vale to Alderworth, taking the precaution of keeping out of any path. The sense that he was watched, that craft was employed to circumvent his errant tastes, added piquancy to a journey so entirely sentimental, so long as the danger was of no fearful sort. He imagined that Venn and Mrs. E. Obright were in league, and felt that there was a certain legitimacy in combating such a coalition. The heath tonight appeared to be totally deserted, and Wildov, after looking over his spacious garden gate for some little time, with a cigar in his mouth, was tempted by the fascination that emotional smuggling had for his nature, to advance towards the window, which was not quite closed, the blind being only partly drawn down. He could see into the room, and Eustacia was sitting there alone. Wildov contemplated her for a minute, and then retreating into the heath beat the ferns lightly, whereupon moths flew out alarmed. Securing one, he returned to the window, and holding the moth to the chink, opened his hand. The moth made towards the candle upon the Eustacia's table, hovered round it two or three times, and flew into the flame. Eustacia started up. This had been a well-known signal in old times, when Wildov had used to come secretly wooing to Miss Tover. She at once knew that Wildov was outside, but before she could consider what to do, her husband came in from upstairs. Eustacia's face burnt crimson at the unexpected collision of incidents, and filled it with an animation that it too frequently lacked. "You have a very high color, dearest," said Eobright, when he came close enough to see it. "Our appearance would be no worse if it were always so." "I am warm," said Eustacia. "Think I will go into the air for a few minutes." "Shall I go with you?" "Oh no. I am only going to the gate." She arose, but before she had time to get out of the room, a loud rapping began upon the front door. I'll go, said Eustacia in an unusually quick tone for her, and she glanced eagerly towards the window, whence the moth had flown, but nothing appeared there. "You had better not at this time of the evening," he said. Klim stepped before her into the passage, and Eustacia waited, her somnolent manner covering her inner heat and agitation. She listened, and Klim opened the door. No words were uttered outside, and presently he closed it and came back, saying, "Nobody was there." "I wonder what that could have meant?" He was left to wonder during the rest of the evening, for no explanation offered itself, and Eustacia said nothing, the additional fact that she knew of only adding more mystery to the performance. Meanwhile, a little drama had been acted outside which saved Eustacia from all possibility of compromising herself that evening at least. Whilst Wildov had been preparing his moth signal, another person had come behind him up to the gate. This man, who carried a gun in his hand, looked on for a moment at the other's operation by the window, walked up to the house, knocked at the door, and then vanished round the corner and over the hedge. "Damn him," said Wildov. "He has been watching me again." As his signal had been rendered futile by this uproarious rapping, Wildov withdrew, passed out at the gate, and walked quickly down the path without thinking of anything except getting away unnoticed. Halfway down the hill, the path ran near a knot of stunted hollies, which in the general darkness of the scene stood as the pupil in a black eye. When Wildov reached this point, a report startled his ear, and a few spent gunshots fell among the leaves around him. There was no doubt that he himself was the cause of that gun's discharge, and he rushed into the clump of hollies, beating the bushes furiously with his stick, but nobody was there. This attack was a more serious matter than the last, and it was some time before Wildov recovered his equanimity. A new and most unpleasant system of menace had begun, and the intent appeared to be to do him grievous bodily harm. Wildov had looked upon Ven's first attempt as a species of horseplay, which the Red Omen had indulged in for want of knowing better, but now the boundary line was passed which divides the annoying from the perilous. Had Wildov known how thoroughly in earnest Ven had become, he might have been still more alarmed. The Red Omen had been almost exasperated by the sight of Wildov outside Klim's house, and he was prepared to go to any lengths short of absolutely shooting him, to terrify the young innkeeper out of his recalcitrant impulses. The doubtful legitimacy of such rough coercion did not disturb the mind of Ven. It troubles few such minds in such cases, and sometimes this is not to be regretted. From the impeachment of Strafford to Farmer Lynch's short way with the scamps of Virginia, there have been many triumphs of justice which are mockeries of law. About half a mile below Klim's secluded dwelling lay a hamlet, where lived one of the two constables who preserved the peace in the parish of Alderworth, and Wildov went straight to the constable's cottage. Almost the first thing that he saw on opening the door was the constable's truncheon hanging to a nail, as if to assure him that here were the means to his purpose. On inquiry, however, of the constable's wife, he learned that the constable was not at home. Wildov said he would wait. The minutes ticked on, and the constable did not arrive. Wildov cooled down from his state of high indignation to a restless dissatisfaction with himself, the scene, the constable's wife, and the whole set of circumstances. He arose and left the house. Altogether, the experience of that evening had had a cooling, not to say a chilling, effect on misdirected tenderness, and Wildov was in no mood to ramble again to Alderworth after nightfall in hope of a stray glance from Eustacia. Thus far the Red Omen had been tolerably successful in his rude contrivances for keeping down Wildov's inclination to rove in the evening. He had nipped in the bud the possible meeting between Eustacia and her old lover this very night. But he had not anticipated that the tendency of his action would be to divert Wildov's movement rather than to stop it. The gambling with the guineas had not conduced to make him a welcome guest to Klim, but to call upon his wife's relative was natural, and he was determined to see Eustacia. It was necessary to choose some less untoward hour than 10 o'clock at night. Since it is unsafe to go in the evening, he said, I'll go by day. Meanwhile Ven had left the heath, and gone to call upon Mrs. Eobright, with whom he had been on friendly terms since he had learned what a providential counter-move he had made towards the restitution of the family guineas. She wondered at the lateness of his call, but had no objection to see him. He gave her a full account of Klim's affliction, and of the state in which he was living, then, referring to Thomason, touched gently upon the apparent sadness of her days. Now, ma'am, depend upon it, he said, you couldn't do a better thing for either of them than to make yourself at home in their houses, even if there should be a little rebuff at first. Both she and my son disobeyed me in marrying, therefore I have no interest in their households. Their troubles are of their own making. Mrs. Eobright tried to speak severely, but the account of her son's state had moved her more than she cared to show. Your visits would make Wildov walk straighter than he is inclined to do, and might prevent unhappiness down the heath. What do you mean? I saw something tonight out there which I didn't like at all. I wish your son's house and Mr. Wildov's were 100. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.